What are the low-hanging fruits that you can do right now to instantly improve the health and function of your brain? Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the show. It's Louisa Nicola. I'm a neurophysiologist and human performance coach. I'm the founder of NeuroAthletics, where our mission is to democratize brain health education so you can perform better, think faster, and live longer. And the topic of today's episode is supplements for brain health and function. I'm going to outline three. And it's basically a series of fundamental basics that you should know if you are wanting to improve your brain health and function, no matter what age you are or what you're optimizing for. Many listeners of this podcast are at the peak of their career and want the ability to think faster, retain information for longer, or simply just be able to have more brain energy, while others are at the point of their lives where they just want to ensure that they have a healthy aging brain. So either way, this episode has everything for you and more. Before we get into the episode, I'd like to thank today's sponsor, which is Keto Brains. Keto Brains is a highly effective nootropic stack with functionally relevant doses of key nootropics. The ketogenic diet team is very popular amongst the brain energy space because it shifts the body, or the body's primary energy source, from glucose to ketones, which are actually derived from fats. And when you're in this metabolic state, which is also known as ketosis, it's believed to enhance cognitive function, improve mental clarity, and potentially provide neuroprotective benefits. Keto Brains contains C8-MCT, which has been shown to almost double the ketone energy in a healthy brain. It contains alpha-GPC, which crosses the blood-brain barrier to increase production of acetylcholine. It contains L-theanine, which also crosses the blood-brain barrier, where it increases GABA. And this has been shown to trigger the release of alpha brainwaves to enhance relaxation. GABA is our chief inhibitory neurotransmitter, so it helps us relax and calm down. And then last but not least, it also has lion's mane, which is a medicinal mushroom that studies have shown supports brain health by stimulating the production of two important compounds, nerve growth factor and brain-derived neurotrophic factor. So, Keto Brains mixes really, really well. I have to say that so many supplements don't. Keto Brains actually mixes really well. And I have it at around 2 p.m. each day because I don't consume caffeine, especially in the US. And I use this as an alternative to push me throughout the day. So if you want to transform your morning routine, experience clean, no jitters energy, enhanced mental well-being, and razor sharp focus, then Keto Brains Nootropic is something you need to try out. And the most amazing part of all this is if you want to try it out or just learn more information about it, you can get 20% off using my code NEURO, N-E-U-R-O, at checkout when you go to ketobrains.com. That's Keto Brains with a Z, K-E-T-O-B-R-A-I-N-Z.com. Use code NEURO for 20% off. So let's talk first and foremost about what brain health is. I mean, my biggest distaste in the health industry on Instagram is the fact that so many people think they know what they're talking about when it comes to the brain, as if, like, you know, everyone can just go out there and know about the most important organ in the body. And there's just so much information out there on, hey, take this supplement, you know, take this and it improves this, and take this supplement to improve focus, attention. But I have to tell you, supplements are exactly that, supplements. So before we get into anything, I need all of you to know that your brain does not function without adequate blood flow. So you can take all the supplements you want, you can do anything, you can take all the caffeine you want, but if you are not getting regular exercise, which is my entire thesis, if you don't get regular exercise, which literally shunts blood to the brain, giving it adequate nutrients and oxygen, then you have no hope and you are just spending so much money based on marketing that's not going to work. Now, I'm assuming that all of you are exercising, and I'm assuming all of you are sleeping And hopefully many of you are eating a great diet. So if you are doing that, I'm going to introduce you to three of the most well-studied supplements when it comes to brain health, and three supplements that I take daily, because yes, I exercise daily as well. So these supplement my exercise. They don't take away from anything. And these three things can really help improve the function of your brain. That is how well the brain waves are interacting with each other, how well the neurons are firing with each other, but can also help with a healthy aging brain, because our brain, yes, I know it's a sad reality, team. Our brain ages. That's why when we're 80, we're just not as sharp as what we were when we were 20. That's just natural. It's going to happen to all of us. Anybody out there telling you that you can have the same brain at age 80 as you can at age 20 is just lying to you. So don't listen to them. So let's get into the first one. It may come as no surprise to you that I'm going to talk about creatine. So creatine is the most widely recognized and most widely studied supplement on the market. And it's really recognized for enhancing muscle performance and recovery, and it's garnered a lot of significant support from the International Society of Sports Nutrition, which actually they acknowledge creatine as one of the most effective supplements for boosting high intensity exercise capacity and lean muscle mass. Now, on a personal note, I just want you to know that I take 5 grams of creatine daily. And I don't just do this for exercise purposes. I also do this for enhancement of memory and cognitive functions. So this industry now, the science industry, especially when it comes to neurology, has become extremely interested in the potential effects of creatine on brain health and function. We're now seeing improvements in neuroprotective effects when it comes to hits to the head. I know that there's been several studies on NFL players supplementing with creatine, high doses, by the way, to protect them against potential knocks to the head. So that's a really great area. I know that there's some fascinating research that's been taking place for people with mild cognitive impairment. Mild cognitive impairment is a pre-dementia state. So there's amazing preclinical studies that are happening in that space. And there's also wonderful research on Parkinson's disease and creatine. So this is not just some muscle-enhancing supplement, if you will. We've got a lot of research that is showing the potential benefits in every area. And there's also, I just want to point this out before you all message me. A creatine does not contribute to hair loss. The idea that creatine might cause hair loss is a topic that gets tossed around a lot, especially in the fitness and health circles. And this is because of one thing, DHT levels. The main reason people link creatine to hair loss is partly due to its potential impact on a hormone called dihydrotestosterone, which is also known as DHT. And that is a byproduct of testosterone and plays a key role in male biological characteristics. It's also been linked to male pattern baldness. And some studies suggest that creatine supplementation may increase the conversion of testosterone to DHT, but I have to tell you, it doesn't. And also, creatine also does not cause kidney problems. So now that we've gotten that out of the way, let's talk about what creatine actually is. So it's stored in the body as phosphocreatine, and it plays a crucial role in replenishing cellular energy in the form of ATP. Now, when we look at memory, for example, memory processes are energy intensive. Elevated brain creatine levels can boost memory by modifying brain energy dynamics. And not just that, you have to understand that 20% of the calories that you ingest is taken up by the brain. Your brain is a really hungry organ, and it sucks a lot of energy away from you. That's why things are so mentally taxing. And that's why some people are very mentally taxing. So if you are dealing with a mentally taxing person, you may want to up your creatine to 7 grams. That was a little joke. But There's some key questions to really point out when we talk and link creatine to brain health. And the first one is, does creatine supplementation enhance brain creatine levels and can it pass the blood-brain barrier? Now, I did a really wide search on PubMed and I found that while there are certain meta-analyses that indicate that some ability of creatine can accumulate in the brain, its uptake is generally more limited compared to other tissues like skeletal muscle. And this discrepancy is partly due to the brain's innate capacity to synthesize creatine, making it less dependent on external sources, except perhaps under certain stress conditions like sleep deprivation, enhanced physical activity, chronic diseases like aging, depression, or Alzheimer's. But the impact of creatine on brain function, particularly memory enhancement, is really considerable. And studies also show like varying results. So some studies that I looked into report positive effects, while others see no significant changes. And these inconsistencies stem from differences in study methodologies, such as participant characteristics or small sample sizes. I actually found one systematic review and meta-analysis focused on only randomized control trials in healthy participants. And they included a wide range of studies varying in duration and employing diverse memory assessment tools. And that really complicated the data immensely. But most of the studies, when you look it up, are around, I would say 95% of the studies suggests an improvement in memory performance with creatine supplementation compared to placebo. And this, I really think, and this is in my humble opinion, I've also interviewed Darren Kandow. His, you know, entire PhD has been revolved around creatine supplementation. You can go and look at that. My entire thesis when it comes to the brain is this. Your brain is an energy-demanding organ. It requires energy to do anything. Stave off negative thoughts, increase memory, retain information, be able to think faster, perform better, have energy all throughout the day and night. So if it requires energy from the neurons, which is the primary cell in the brain, then we need to be fueling it with the energy that it requires. And this is what creatine does. So my perspective is that creatine does indeed benefit memory. I do believe that further extensive research is necessary, but there's, I think, an abundance of research to show the correlation between creatine and brain health. And let me tell you, when I interviewed Darren Kandow, he said that this can be optimal for anybody, even kids like ages 5 to 80. So there's been no side effects on taking creatine supplementation at 5 grams a day, even taking 20 grams a day, although I don't recommend that. If you are a male and you are a bigger build, maybe you want to start on 7.5 grams per day. You don't need to preload. People think that you may need to take, you know, 10 grams a day for the first 7 days and then back off from there. You don't need to do that. Just take 5 grams per day and you will see a difference. And even if you don't, just take this with you. Creatine enhances cell energy production. You need energy, especially in 2024. You know, 50, 60 years ago when the internet wasn't here, I don't even know when the internet was formed, but like, you know, just our brain requires energy to even look at notifications from our phone. So take your creatine. The second supplement that I want to talk about is vitamin D. Vitamin D, about 70% of the US population has inadequate vitamin D, and there's been many different meta-analyses over the decades, like dating back to the 1960s, looking at vitamin D levels and all-cause mortality. So it's pretty clear from all of the data that having levels less than 30 nanograms per milliliter is associated with a lower all-cause mortality. So I want to give you a personal note. I put this on Instagram quite recently. I had my vitamin D levels checked. I checked it with Inside Tracker, and this was September 1st. Guys, I was disgusted and appalled in myself. I mean, look, I live in the United States. I live in New York. There is not that much sunshine here, and I also work indoors. My reading came back as 20. I was mortified, absolutely mortified. So I started supplementing with 5,000 IUs per day. I rechecked when I was in Australia. I rechecked in January, and it came back, I think, to 34. So supplementing from September, October, November, December, January. So that was, I would say, like 4.5 months of 5,000 IUs per day, and I don't tend to skip a day, only increased it slightly. So that was pretty scary. So also want to point out that if you are in the US and you have insurance, then you don't have to pay out of pocket, and your doctor should be able to check vitamin D for you at least once a year. The normal reference ranges for vitamin D are 20 to 50 nanograms per milliliter. However, if you truly want to be optimized, and this is, you know, going by the research, you want to be looking at getting a vitamin D level up to, I think, around 50 to 60 nanograms per milliliter. But here's the cool thing about vitamin D. Taking vitamin D supplements is super easy, especially if you're indoors. And what happens is, like, we're mostly indoors, right? We're glued to our screens, missing out on natural sunlight. Then we've got factors like aging and skin color, which affect how much vitamin D that we can make from the sun. This is the cool thing. As we get older, like when you hit around 70 years old, you're making only around 25% of the vitamin D that you would make in your 20s. And then couple that with sun cream. Okay, another thing, I really care about my face skin health because I just don't want to age terribly. I want to have really nice skin. When we wear sun cream, it blocks UVB rays, and UVB rays is needed for vitamin D synthesis. So a lot goes into this, right? If you're wearing sun cream, you know, I do suggest wearing sun cream, obviously, but when you wear it, you're also blocking UVB. So then that's another added, you know, mix to us not getting our vitamin D fix. But here's how it relates to the brain. Vitamin D isn't just a vitamin. It's also a hormone. It turns into a steroid hormone in your body. And the process goes like this. It goes to your liver. It gets converted into this thing called 20-hydroxyvitamin D. And then it heads to your kidneys, where it turns into a steroid hormone. This hormone gets all up in your cell's DNA, and it starts turning genes on and turning genes off. And these genes are the ones that are crucial for brain functions, such as making serotonin. And we know that serotonin is important, and it's key for mood and cognitive function. Here's another funny thing, especially when it comes to like influencers on Instagram who don't really know their biochemistry. If you really know your biochemistry, you'll know that magnesium is required for vitamin D synthesis, vitamin D metabolism, and vitamin D binding function. There's like a wide selection of studies that have now reported that insufficient magnesium status is actually correlated with low blood levels of vitamin D. So what most people don't know is that these studies clearly demonstrate that magnesium supplementation alone raises vitamin D status, even in the absence of concurrent vitamin D supplementation, through improving the pathways. So I get, you know, when we bring on a new client, a private client at NeuroAthletics, we do a full workup, which includes a really intensive blood panel. I'm talking like we get over like 700 different biomarkers. It's pretty crazy, right? I can see if one of our clients comes back with a low vitamin D, I don't immediately say, okay, let's just give you 10,000 IUs, which is like a bolus of the sun, right? I don't just dose them up with vitamin D. That's really stupid. I first think of, why did this body think it was important to lower vitamin D? You have to look at all the pathways. I look at magnesium status, right? Magnesium status would also probably be low. But I also look at heavy metal exposure. We know that there is in the literature, we've seen that metals, toxic metals, bind to vitamin D. So if we have heavy metal exposure in our blood, our body is really smart. It says, oh, this guy has a lot of heavy metals, so I'm going to lower vitamin D, because vitamin D binds to these heavy metals. So if you don't know this and then you just get a low vitamin D blood reading and then you go and take 10,000 IUs of vitamin D and you have heavy metals in your system, you're just raising the metals in your system. So you really have to think about like who you're getting your blood work from, and not just that, because anyone can take your blood work really. It's who is actually breaking it down. And sadly, a lot of general practitioners and your PCP who's doing this for you will see a low vitamin D reading. They won't go into everything else in your blood. They'll just see that and give you 5,000 IUs of vitamin D, which I think is really ludicrous, right? So like I mentioned above, studies suggest that the number is as high as 75% of the population that doesn't meet their daily recommended intake of magnesium. And to make matters worse, when it comes to athletes and high performers, they need roughly 20% more magnesium due to the increased need for magnesium during muscular repair and increased magnesium loss through sweat and urine. So just because something is low doesn't mean you should supplement with it. Just because your vitamin D is low doesn't mean you should supplement with vitamin D. A better and more complete approach to this entire process would be to view a low marker as an opportunity to ask better questions rather than immediately jump to conclusion. Statistically speaking, the correction of magnesium status alone for a large subset of population will create a positive impact on vitamin D status. I've done an episode, I think around 2 years ago as well, on the fact that we have vitamin D receptors on our brainstem, which is why vitamin D is closely like linked to sleep. So if you're having trouble sleeping and you're like, what is it? I'm going to bed at the right time. I'm sleeping in a pitch black room. You may also want to check your vitamin D status, because vitamin D is so strongly related to the health of your brain, the health of your immune system, keeping your bones strong, and keeping your brain happy. So it's not just about bones and immunity. It plays a big role in preventing respiratory diseases too. But guys, vitamin D is super crucial. Go and get yours checked. You can obviously go and get it checked with my guys at Inside Tracker if you want. Last but not least is, of course, omega-3 fatty acids. The amount of times that I mention this on public forums, like my Instagram, for example, people think that I'm like developing my own omega-3 fatty acid. Maybe I will in the future, but let's get into it. So omega-3 fatty acids are broken into three parts. You've got EPA, DHA, and ALA. And these are often understudied and overlooked, and they're vital nutrients for the brain. So DHA in particular is what I'm going to focus on today, because it's a significant component of the brain, making up around 20% of the brain's lipids. Marine sources of omega-3 such as fish and microalgae are rich in EPA and DHA. In fact, a Harvard study from 2009 highlighted the importance of these fatty acids, linking a deficiency in EPA and DHA to a significant number of preventable deaths annually, comparable to deaths caused by trans fats consumptions. So this further emphasizes how important EPA and DHA is in overall health, including brain function. I want to just quickly get ALA out of the way, because I know many people will be asking me about that, especially the vegan community. Now, while ALA is an essential fatty acid, I mean, you can find ALA in walnuts, chia seeds, flax seeds. The body's conversion of ALA to EPA and then DHA is highly insufficient, or inefficient, I should say, with wide genetic variances affecting this process. So excessive intake of omega-6 fatty acids, which is found in vegetable oils, can actually compete with the enzymes required for this conversion, which further exacerbates the inefficiency. So this is why I really focus on EPA and DHA. But interestingly, when I was looking into the research for this, estrogen significantly boosts the conversion of ALA to EPA and then DHA, particularly vital during pregnancy when DHA is crucial for brain development. So this natural adaptation underscores the importance of DHA in brain health. Now, you may wonder, okay, well, how do I, you know, because I'm really emphasizing the fact that you should always know where your levels are. You can do this with blood work. So if you go to your general practitioner and you ask them to do an omega-3 fatty acid blood test, I wouldn't suggest that because they're just checking the omega-3 fatty acids like in your blood, whereas the most effective way of really understanding your omega-3 is via an omega-3 index. And this measures EPA and DHA levels in red blood cell membrane, which actually offers a more long-term view of omega-3 status. It's like, you know, it's similar to the difference between getting a fasting glucose test and an HbA1c levels test. And when you look at the studies, it's shown that having a higher omega-3 index is associated with increased life expectancy and reduced mortality. So I got my omega-3 index test. It's formulated by Dr. Bill Harris. And I got my levels checked in January as well. And I'm very proud to announce that I have an omega-3 index test, an index of 10.5. I really want to get it up to like that of a dolphin, which I think is like 14 or 15. But look, most of the population in the US has an omega-3 index of less than 4%. So I'm doing quite well. So let's keep moving on. Let's talk about the protective role of omega-3 fatty acids. So these types of fats accumulate in cell membrane and it influences transporter and receptor functions. So these fatty acids are crucial for efficient glucose transport to the brain and play an essential role in resolving inflammation. Chronic low-level inflammation is a known driver of the aging process and various diseases. So if we can mitigate these effects with omega-3, then we're lowering our risk of chronic inflammation. And you've probably all heard of neural inflammation. Of course we have. Remember, symptoms are a cry for help from the body. If you're getting a headache, you may have some neural inflammation happening. But we really want to put these inflammatory cytokines, we really want to put them at rest. And a really great way of resolving that is through omega-3 fatty acids, which is why I love them. Like they're so safe to take. And the fact that I now know that I can lower my inflammation through omega-3 fatty acids, then it's better than taking an Advil, honestly. So the best way on that note to ensure like adequate intake of EPA, DHA is through supplements. You know, we can get it from fatty fish like salmon and mackerel, but I have to tell you, most of the fish these days are farmed. So you're not actually getting the adequate amount. And you're also not like you're going to have to eat tons and tons and tons of fish. And I don't think anybody's out there doing that. So unfortunately you do have to supplement with it. I supplement with 2 grams of EPA and 2 grams of DHA per day, and my levels are 10.5. I get all of my supplements from Momentous. I will link below if you want 15% off EPA, DHA. They are third-party tested, triple certified, so you don't have to worry about getting rancid EPA, DHA, which if you're buying your supplements on Amazon, please stop doing that. So team, not just that, I've read a lot of studies on mild cognitive impairment, and you would know that one of the primary hallmarks of Alzheimer's disease is these amyloid beta proteins, okay, which evidently build up and cause what we now know as the amyloid cascade hypothesis, these plaques and tangles that build up during the pathogenesis of Alzheimer's disease. I've read some wonderful studies on taking 4 grams of EPA DHA, which had been given to Alzheimer's disease patients over the age of 65. And you can see through brain MRI that these have been ameliorated, like these plaques can be ameliorated through the use of omega-3 fatty acids. So there you have it, omega-3 fatty acids. We've got cell membrane fluidity. We've got resolving of the inflammation and completely dampening accumulation of inflammation, which we all get on a daily basis. Then you've also got the potential effects of it ameliorating these nasty buildups that can essentially cause Alzheimer's disease. So omega-3 fatty acids aren't just essential for brain health, but also play a crucial role in aging, in cardiovascular health, in inflammation, because their ability to influence various physiological processes makes them a vital component of a healthy diet. So make sure you're getting your EPA, DHA. They're indispensable for brain health, and it's often overlooked. So whether you're getting it through some diet, but also through supplementation, it's going to help you with the brain aging process. And that concludes today's episode. If you know anybody that is trying to reach their peak brain health, go through and send them this episode. And if you're feeling really generous, please go through and write a review on Apple iTunes. Until next time.